Welcome to The Last Post, Tia Cummins. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. There's a long weekend coming up, so I'm pretty excited for that.
Yes, it's always a good thing, and it gives you a chance to just possibly relax a bit more, so that's great stuff. And you certainly deserve it, Tia. You've done some amazing work. I think you did a PhD. Can you tell us a bit about your background?
Yes, so I, as you can probably tell from my accent, was not bred in Australia, although I was born over here. I was brought up in the UK, so I actually lived for many years in Northern Ireland.
Yep.
And that's where I did my undergraduate degree in psychology, so at Queen's University Belfast.
Yes.
Whilst I was there, I also served within the British Army Reserve.
That's right.
I was with them for 3 years, and it was really that service in conjunction with the psychology degree that got me interested in military mental health. So I came to Australia about 6.5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and started working on what we sort of colloquially named the Veterans Study. And then in 2015, February 2015, started my PhD on that study.
Mm. Now, Tia, as an Army Reservist, your interest was raised, I think, by you were looking at aggression and how it affected the brain.
Yes. Yes, I was actually, I was really interested by all the characters that we had within my own regiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated during my basic training, which was just 4 weeks long, it was like an intensive training course. I was fascinated about how we were always encouraged to be really aggressive when we were sort of doing our bayonet training, etc. So I wanted to know if there was actually any benefit to that whatsoever. So yeah, I basically measured trait aggression, so that's just how naturally aggressive you are,
mm-hmm.
in soldiers, and took some results from their military shooting practices that they had at the target ranges,
mm-hmm.
and also got them to do some computerized testing as well.
Yep.
And what I found was that being aggressive actually makes you much more confident and a much better shot as well. You're much more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're obviously much more impulsive as well. So when it comes to things that require a lot of attention and careful processing, you're perhaps not as skilled within that domain because you're a little bit too confident and ambitious to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you got a PhD. Where did that happen?
So I did that at the University of Melbourne.
Right. Okay, that's fine. And look, with the Veterans Studies, you had a fascination with that. There were some other things you found out too, I guess, about Alzheimer's, dementia in general. What were they?
Yeah, so for this study, the main aim was to determine if veterans who had a history of post-traumatic stress disorder,
mm-hmm.
or traumatic brain injury were more likely to have Alzheimer's disease. So this was really following on from research that had been done over the years where mostly World War II veterans had been followed up for a very long time, and researchers found that if they had PTSD, they were up to twice as likely to be diagnosed with a dementia, and if they'd had a head injury, they were up to four times as likely. So we used a whole range of measures that we had at our centres at the Austin Health and the Florey Institute.
Yeah.
And we try to look inside the brain to look at some changes that occur when somebody has Alzheimer's. So we looked for a buildup of proteins, so tau tangles and amyloid plaques. And we looked at memory and thinking processes, and we looked at genetics and all sorts of things to see what was going on. Basically, we found that neither PTSD nor head injury made these individuals more at risk for Alzheimer's disease. We couldn't find any changes in the brain that would link it to Alzheimer's. But what we did find is that if the guy suffered a fairly substantial head injury during their service, whilst they'd adapted and recovered over the years, you could still see tissue tears in the brain 30 to 50 years later,
mm-hmm.
which accounted for some sort of memory and thinking difficulties that they showed in some of the cognitive tests.
Right.
However, they didn't have anything else indicative of Alzheimer's. Now, what I also saw kind of secondary to this was that having lived for many, many years with a psychiatric disorder such as PTSD, they actually had a number of medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is happening is that these World War II veterans who were up to twice as likely to be diagnosed with dementia, I think they had a pseudo-dementia. And I think that if we follow up veterans as they age, you have this PTSD, that we start to see something that almost mirrors dementia.
Right.
In that they have personality changes, they have issues with their thinking and their memory. However, that's largely due to symptoms that they're suffering from on the day. So if we can treat the PTSD, I believe we can help these people age a lot better and have a much better quality of life.
Mm-hmm. That's almost revolutionary thinking. I guess the pseudo-dementia, I mean, that's how does that happen?
Well, I think this is because when we diagnose, or when the medical field diagnoses dementia, it usually relies on a face-to-face diagnosis. We don't always have these like amazing neuroimaging techniques at our disposal.
Right.
So I think they've just been misdiagnosed.
Especially
if we're looking at World War II veterans, I think they've probably had symptoms that look like dementia,
yep.
but are actually due to the PTSD.
Yep.
And I think that's where the pseudo-dementia is coming in. I mean, this is my theory.
Mm.
Off the back of this, I do feel quite strongly about it. So off the back of it, I've founded a sort of new research project called VR Core,
right.
because I want to develop a new treatment for PTSD using virtual reality.
Wow. Okay. So having been under virtual reality, I mean, it's a mind expanding experience. How exactly would that happen? How would you go about treating it through virtual reality?
Yeah. So basically, we have some traditional techniques that are used sort of in a normal therapy room with a clinician, and they can be great for civilians. Mm. However, they're not so good with military personnel, just due to sort of a variety of different reasons. So essentially what we're doing is we're taking those traditional therapies and just putting them into this virtual reality platform.
Mm.
And it sort of becomes a type of exposure therapy.
Right.
So if we can expose the veteran to a trauma that they went through, but in sort of very small steps, then we can potentially help them with their fear response gets overactivated every time they think of the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of intervention side of it. But we've got another two arms as well that we're working on, where we're going to try and not only detect when somebody has PTSD, but also try and prevent it in the first place as well.
Yeah, brilliant. And taking you to the top of the game there, I think, too, Tia, in that respect. I mean, it takes new thinking to deal with old problems sometimes, and I think this is what you're doing. I mean, did you collaborate with the University of California, I think, in San Francisco to get recruits veterans to work with? Or
yeah, so the original veteran study is actually a sister study with the UCLA or UCSF as well.
Mm.
And so they were doing some great work over in the States, where they're basically doing the same thing as us. Obviously, they have a lot more veterans to sort of to choose from,
yeah.
Or to recruit from, a much bigger pool. But yeah, we were basically a sister study with them. So there's a group over there that my old lab worked with a lot and collaborated with on a lot of different dementia studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this is another one where we wanted just to make sure that we all had the same findings.
Yeah, yeah, very good collaboration. Meeting the veterans, I mean, having been a cadet yourself, are you still involved in that? Oh, sorry, a reservist. Are you still involved in that?
No, not over here. So mm-hmm. I still, obviously, I'm working within the sort of military mental health realm. I volunteer with a not-for-profit called Rewire.
Right.
And through them, we actually work with veterans with PTSD, and we facilitate drumming groups to help alleviate some of their symptoms. But no, I don't. I'm not in active service at the moment.
No, that's fine. And meeting with the veterans puts a human face to all the work you're doing, and I guess helps bring some satisfaction to you knowing that you're assisting these people in some way.
Yeah, I think when you work in science, it can be very easy to get distracted by all the numbers
and all
the spreadsheets that you're dealing with and stuff. So actually seeing them, and I interviewed, well, I think we had 127 in the study, and I interviewed 124 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it definitely puts things into perspective when, you know, your computer crashes or something freezes and you're having a bit of a bad morning. And then you go and chat to one of these guys who's just gone through hell for the last 50 years because of what he was conscripted to do. So yeah, no, it was really, really humbling and amazing. Like, I really enjoyed every single conversation that I had with him.
Mm-hmm. Tia, it's magnificent work. And I think probably with post-traumatic stress disorder, it's something that we speak about regularly in the magazine because of its significance and its frequency. Has it increased, or just has the realization that it's there meant that more people are being diagnosed?
Yeah, I think it's the reduction in stigma attached to it. I mean, it's technically it's only been a recognized disorder since 1986 or maybe 1982. So it hasn't been around for that long in the grand scheme of things, sort of diagnostically. But I think now we're finally getting to the stage where we're able to detect it a little bit quicker. Individuals are a little bit more open to sort of coming out with it so they can get the correct treatment. I think we still have a really long way to go. And this is why I'm so passionate about VR Core, because I really want to be able to detect the disorder before somebody's symptomatic. I want to get it when it's just starting to bubble to the surface. Because if we can nip it in the bud, I think that's our best chance for effective treatment.
Yeah, well said. I think you did address it, I think, at some stage, saying that it was preventable to a degree. So
yeah.
if that was the case, then you certainly would be assisting a lot of people. And I know that the veterans that involved themselves with the study, etc., spoke highly of your efforts, and I know that they were grateful for the opportunity to help, I guess, other veterans coming home from wars. This is something that will be obviously of great help to a growing number of veterans. Where do you see yourself going? This is such a, I guess you're discovering new things almost on a regular basis regarding this.
Yeah, I mean, from this research, it's really shown me the long-term effects of a disorder that is treatable.
Mm.
And I find that's what's really almost frustrating to me, is that this is something where I saw a lot of veterans who went through the best possible care they could get at the Austin. That's a fantastic facility for combat-related PTSD, yet still they had these lingering symptoms. And then you see sort of many years later how that has devastated their life. So it frustrates me, because I know that we can fix it. We can come up with a new treatment using all the technology that we have. So for me, that's my passion. That's what I'm focusing on. And I hope to get funding very soon this year for VR Core, so I can actually develop an intervention that will not only treat but help detect and help prevent the disorder.
Yeah. Look, it's been a privilege talking with you, Tia. I think we'll keep our eyes and ears open for this, and your work obviously will become better well-known through the magazine and through veterans themselves talking, and the healing process and the medical, I guess, and scientific help that you're giving through your studies and through your work generally. It's a great privilege, Tia Cummins, and we thank you for sparing the time for us.
No, thank you. You know, I love getting involved with this kind of thing, and I like that the readership or the those who'll be listening will have a direct link to the military-related PTSD. So it's great to be able to reach out to people.
Mm. Thank you, Tia.